Well, this hour with Paul Stemmitz, we'll continue chatting with him about these incredible mushrooms, and we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Paul Stemmitz with us as we talk about mycelium running. It's an amazing story, Paul. It really is.
Yeah, most people don't realize that the oldest fossil yet found in the fossil record of a multicellular organism is mycelium. Recently found in South Africa in the lava beds, 2.4 billion years ago. We have a closer ancestry with fungi than we do with any other kingdom. In fact, animals are descendant of fungi. 650 million years ago, fungi and animals were joined together, and fungi then gave birth to animals. This is why our best antibiotics against bacteria come from fungi, but we have very few good antifungal antibiotics because of our closer evolutionary history. We exhale carbon dioxide, we inhale oxygen. Well, fungi do the same thing. They exhale carbon dioxide, they inhale oxygen. So, you know, these fungi, because everyone knows about penicillin and it comes from a mold, the penicillium mold. But what many people don't know now, which scientists have discovered, is the mycelium produces antibiotics that set up the microbiome, that set the stage for the evolution of habitats. Fungi munch rocks. They're the first organisms to come to land. They join with algae to form lichens. And so lichens are actually a binary organism, two organisms joined together that are in cooperation. But as the fungi munch rocks, they create the soil lenses, and then the plant communities follow. And so these lenses of soil are created from fungi that are constantly underground, like an underground network. They're really the overlords, but they're the underlords, right? They're really governing the evolution of habitats. And the loss of biodiversity on this planet is really a huge threat to our children's future and to our own future today. We have about 8.3 million species on this planet, and we're losing more than 30,000 per year. Well, do the math. In 100 years, that's more than 30% of the biodiversity that got us here today we're losing.
Way too much.
Literally, the ground is unraveling underneath our feet. And as we lose soil, we lose the carrying capacity to be able to sustain the organisms that provide us this wonderful life. It's really an all-hands-on-deck moment. And the future survival of our planet is dependent upon people taking action and protecting biodiversity.
Paul, the common mushrooms that we buy in the grocery store, like the button-type mushrooms and shiitake mushrooms, are they good for you, too, medicinally?
Absolutely. Shiitake mushrooms in particular have antioxidants called ergotheanines, and these are extremely potent antioxidants that prevent DNA damage. They upregulate the immune system. When these mushrooms are put into the sun, they're the best source of vitamin D of any land-based organism. And a lot of vegetarians and vegans, you know, need vitamin D, and they can't get it from, you know, if they don't eat fish, you know, or other sources. And then most people may not realize that the majority of vitamin D that's sold in the stores is coming from lanolin, from sheep's wool, or from pig skin. They use UV lights on the slaughterhouses and stretch the skin, and they make vitamin D from it. The vitamin D2 is coming from mushrooms, and vitamin D3 is coming from animal sources. But they both convert into 25-hydroxy vitamin D in your blood, and they confer the benefits. And the vitamin, you know, we wear clothes, so we evolved basically and exposed to the sun. And, you know, for millions of years, we were in Africa. We moved north into Europe, and we put on clothes to keep warm, and we sheltered ourselves from the sun. Now, too much sun, obviously, is dangerous, but, you know, we need it.
Got to have some.
Yeah, you need to have some because vitamin D is a key component for your immune system, the absence of which immunologically impairs you. So mushrooms are a wonderful source of vitamin Bs. They're complete proteins, the complete amino acid complexes. And now we know they have these substantial antiviral and immune-enhancing properties that can help tilt the balance to fortify your immune system.
Let me ask you of psilocybin mushrooms and what's going on there, because they've been in the news a lot lately.
On the psilocybin mushroom?
Yeah.
Well, right now there is there's a huge movement on microdosing. Now, I know a lot of elders and other people who are very conservative who would not even consider taking a psychedelic or a magic mushroom. But now the evidence of psilocybin causing neurogenesis, being able to help your mental state and your cognitive abilities. And so throughout Silicon Valley right now, there's an enormous use of these psilocybin mushrooms at sub-threshold levels, below that which you can feel, and it increases cognitive function. Coders are using this, and all the major computer companies. I'm privy to some inside information that I obviously can't talk about, but these companies, everybody knows. And it helps imagination, creativity. And we have a loss of intellectual capital in this country. And as our elders, who are encyclopedic in their knowledge, when we lose, because of Alzheimer's and neuropathies, we lose the ability to transmit this information, these worldwide, these lifelong experiences, this knowledge, body, intellect to the next generation. That's a loss of intellectual capital to this country. And so the idea of taking a sub-threshold dose where there's no change in consciousness that's noticeable, I will state for the record, I do think they should remain illegal. I live in a...
Well, why? Tell me why.
Well, I'm out in the country, you know. I live on a narrow road way out in the country. I don't want somebody high on psilocybin mushrooms driving the opposite side of the road. I don't want to get killed, you know, if they're intoxicated for any reason, you know.
Well, they could be drunk on booze, right?
Right. That's right. In fact, some of our neighbors have died because of that. So intoxication and operating a motor vehicle is not a good combination. But at these levels, sub-threshold, there's no change in your motor skills whatsoever. And in fact, there's increasing evidence of neurogenesis. And then there's another mushroom called lion's mane mushrooms. And so I'm really fascinated, and I'm working with some physicians in Canada right now, preliminarily. There's three universities that wanted to combine lion's mane mushrooms, which are legal. You can buy them in the store. There's supplements out there. And it causes neurogenesis as well. It removes amyloid plaque that's associated with Alzheimer's patients upon death, and there's an autopsy. When they resect the brain, they can see these amyloid plaques that interfere with neurotransmission and cause demyelination. And so the myelin is the sheath, the electroconductive sheath that's on the neurons. And then lion's mane mushrooms, in two clinical studies and some very other in vivo studies, have shown that it removes amyloid plaques and causes remyelination. Now, psilocybin causes regeneration of neurons at the end points, at the tips. And so the idea of stacking lion's mane with psilocybin, microdosing on psilocybin, macrodosing on lion's mane, idea like 2 grams of these mushrooms per day versus 1/20th of a gram of these magic mushrooms, which would have no noticeable effects. Stacking those then may be a magic, quote-unquote, formula for neurogenesis. And, you know, neuropathy oftentimes presents itself as a deadening of the nerves at the endpoints, at the tips of the fingers and the toes. So if your vascular system is intact, be able to drive these neurogenic compounds throughout your nervous system to cause remyelination. We already know behaviorally it's been very, very well studied and proven beyond all skeptical analysis, at least 8 clinical studies showing a significant improvement in cognitive function and behavior and antidepressive. When you're depressed, you're not as creative. When you're happy, you are creative. And so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense. The happier you are, the more creative, the happier you are. And so the idea of breaking out of your depressive cycle to be able to be more productive to society benefits society in general. We really need to reframe our discussion on these psychoactive substances and look at them as being potent medicines. So therapeutically, under license, under the control of a physician, I think these things are well on their way to be approved by the FDA. For use in being able to help people with these challenges.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. Victor in Sulphur Springs, Texas, to get us started, east of the Rockies. Hello, Victor.
Hi. I agree with Paul 100% on that. I also have a question, a couple of questions about, I'm taking shiitake, maitake, and cordyceps and reishi. Now, am I overdoing it? Or last winter, I didn't even have sniffles.
Yeah, well, you and I are in the same boat. I take those two every day. So I take a multi-mushroom formula. And I went 10 years without getting sick, knock on wood, and then I got horribly sick. So I can't brag about that much anymore. But, yeah, they are very powerful for the immune system. And a combination of them, the reason being is the architecture of the mushrooms activates different fields of receptors. You know, once you flood those receptors in the immune system, more is not necessarily better. Because of the unique architecture of the mushrooms, then they can activate more of those subfields or receptors, and then you have a synergy response. That's the best explanation that we have right now.
Next up, let's go to Alex in Grass Valley, California. Welcome to the show. Alex, go ahead, sir.
Hello.
Hi, Alex.
I have to apologize for my phone. I hear it's not very good. But my question is, have you ever heard of the Shivalinga mushroom?
Did you pick that up, Paul?
No, I did not.
What kind of mushrooms, Alex?
It's Shivalinga, you know, like the Hindu god Shiva.
Klimalinga.
No, I have not heard of that.
Where are they from, Alex?
They're so rare, they're almost extinct.
Extinct mushrooms.
But I found one in Hawaii on the island of Molokai.
Okay. Are they any specific mushrooms that you might know about, Paul, in Hawaii?
Well, there's lots of them, but this is maybe a common name, and it's not associated with a Latin name. You know, lots of common names, and so this is not one that I'm familiar with.
What kind of mushrooms do you eat most of the time?
I eat shiitake and lion's mane. Those are the ones that I'm most favorable to.
What are lion's mane mushrooms?
Well, the lion's mane ones where I was talking about that causes neurogenesis and a regeneration of myelin. They look like a pom-pom. They're a white cascading icicle form.
Do you get them fresh?
I get them fresh, but I eat them. I primarily consume them as a supplement, and I'm a strong believer in their neurogenic properties. I'm hoping I'm getting smarter as I get older. It's debatable, but I seem to be on top of my game these days, and I certainly have been very creative. So,
what's the name of the mushroom that has like a red cap on it?
Amanita muscaria. Is the soma mushroom.
Is that poisonous?
Yes, it is. It is poisonous.
I knew that.
It's not deadly. Most of the poisonous mushrooms are not deadly.
What do they do to you? Just get you sick?
Oh, my gosh. I have stories for you.
Oh, geez.
Well,
don't forget, it's a radio show.
it's a time slows down. It depends. The sub-threat, low doses, you salivate with Amanita muscaria, the soma red mushroom with the white dots you see in all the fairy tale books, etc. It's unmistakable. But it causes the color in the landscape goes to dull yellows and browns. You feel like a giant walking in slow motion. I have a beard. There's tremendous amount of salivation, so you look like you have rabies. A friend of mine goes, "You look like you have rabies." I look at him. I go, "You do too." It's perfectly legal, and it's a very dangerous mushroom because at higher doses it causes repetitive motion syndrome. And there's been many reports, myself and others, that have been recorded in the literature where you end up having repetitive motion. And what happens is you do something. I dropped my camera, and I was really high on these mushrooms, and I picked them up, and I thought, did I just drop my camera? And I dropped my camera again a few hundred times, which freaked people out at this county park and up in near Darrington, Washington. A small crowd of people formed around me and said, "What's going on with this guy?" But I had repetitive motion syndrome. This also speaks to the myth of the berserkers, in Europe, where the Vikings were supposedly using this prior to going into battle, and they'd become basically robotic killing machines. And legend has it that this is used, you know, in order to fortify their ability to withstand pain and just become these Robotrons, you know, that once they started in battle, they just wouldn't stop. that terrified the enemy and was part of the psychological warfare also, you know, when these people are being cut up and they're still fighting and, you know, freaks out the enemy. So that Amanita muscaria, it was called the fly agaric because in Europe it was used to kill flies. And you put this mushroom into milk and a windowsill before we had window screens, and the flies would come in from the outside. They'd sip on the milk, but have the fly agaric mushroom in it, and they can become stupefied and they'd die. So it was called the fly agaric. So, you know, we use these mushrooms historically for lots of different purposes, and these threads of knowledge have been frayed and cut over time. And so we've lost a lot of the knowledge that our ancestors had and used these mushrooms for lots of very important utilitarian purposes.
Next up, Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne-O, welcome.
Oh, thank you, George. I want to say to your guests, it is not debatable. You are getting smarter as you get older, sir.
kind of you. Generous of you, I would say.
And I also want to say all of us should take a deep breath and thank God for people like you who are trying to save the planet, because without the bees, we're gone. But anyway, here's my question. The antiviral properties that you've discovered in the mushrooms and the antibacterial properties, can those properties actually be applied to humans directly, just like they are to the mites that are attacking the bees?
Excellent question. And anyone can Google my name, Stamets, and sorry, George, but I'm going to mention another radio station, National Public Radio.
That's okay.
NPR.
I like those people.
Yeah, I work with the U.S. Defense Department Biodefense BioShield program, and you can Google Stamets and smallpox. It will give you an indication of my original research, and I found a mushroom in the old-growth forest highly active against pox viruses. I work with renowned universities on this, and NIH Virology, the National Institutes of Health, and University of Mississippi School of Pharmacy. And we identified that this old-growth mushroom called agaricon is highly active against pox viruses. This is directly after 9/11. Our research then went into testing against flu viruses, H5N1, H3N2, H1N1. And lo and behold, we found that these extracts, again, of the mycelium, were extraordinarily active side-by-side against pure pharmaceuticals, far more active against flu viruses. So, again, we don't know specifically whether it's an upregulation of the immune system or it's an antiviral consortium of molecules. It's probably a combination of both. But, yeah, there's a chaga, reishi, and agaricon are three extraordinary species that are a deep reservoir of compounds that have the effect of reducing viruses. Whether it's a direct antiviral, like a pharmaceutical, many antiviral pharmaceuticals are quite toxic, especially to the kidneys. The fact that these things are so well tolerated, are non-toxic, and yet so powerful, really is suggesting that, you know, the idea of using complex natural products, and indeed, I think we are soon, and with the bees in particular, we can make the argument, the bees are the animal clinical study. Bees are the second most well-studied animal in the world, humans being number one. But I think that we can make the argument soon, if not right now, with the bees, the natural products can offer a broader bioshield of benefits to pure pharmaceuticals with less toxicity and less adverse reactions.
I got to tell you, Paul, it's an amazing thing. Now, is science doing heavy investigations into these mushrooms?
Stay tuned.
Aha, okay, because you're doing a lot of research. Paul, we'll be back in a moment. We'll take some final phone calls with you. Paul's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You can get to his books that way as well through his websites. And we'll be back and take some final phone calls as we talk about his work in the field of mushrooms on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Next hour, we're talking about a poltergeist in the state of Washington, so get ready for that. And when we come back in a moment with Paul Stamets, we're going to continue talking about the mushrooms and take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Paul Stamets with us, of course. Paul, as the expert here in Star Trek, of course, what's the tie-in with Lieutenant Paul Stamets in the Star Trek Discovery series?
Oh, my. I've been a Trekkie ever since, you know, I was a kid. And it's really great because, you know, science fiction can predict science fact. You know, the flip phone, that's kind of antiquated, but you know, it was first on Star Trek. One of the writers, Alex Kurtzman, I believe, had seen my TED Talk. I have a TED Talk that's pretty popular, and he's been watching me from afar. He actually put me in Hannibal Lecter as Elvin Stamets, this anesthesiologist that was killing patients and then taking the bodies back to his yard and burying them and growing mushrooms on them. I didn't really like that character. But they approached me because of terraforming. And I have a section in my talk about terraforming other planets with fungi. Fungi eat rocks and produce soil for plants. And that's called astrobiology. So they called me up, and I was on the phone for, and then I just blatantly said, you can have all these ideas for free. I don't want any credit. You know, I'm a Star Trek fan. And so I downloaded it for about 2.5 hours, and I told them to record this conversation, which they did. And then I blurted out that I always wanted to be the first astromycologist. They go, astromycologist? We can use that. You know, and because we talk about astrobiology, the existence of other organisms, you know, beyond Earth in outer space. And so we started talking about astromycology, and the mycelium structure follows the same structure that of brain neurons and a network-based form. The mycelium, brain neurons, the computer internet has the same archetype, the same general structure, as well as dark matter in the universe. And so they really picked up on this. And so Anthony Rapp has done a great job. And I gave them ideas, and they used them. And so they said, well, you know what?
Let's name him you.
Yeah, they'll name me. And so I mean, who would have thought? I mean, I'm a 12-year-old kid watching Star Trek, you know, and I could never have imagined that I would actually see my persona, so to speak.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm greatly honored because to inspire children about science, citizen scientists, we need to inspire children about science so as they become adults. And I know of two mycologists who've gotten their PhDs and are teaching in mycology who got one of our mushroom kits when they were like 7 or 8 years of age. And that got them stimulated about the exciting about the field of mycology. Mycology is the study of fungi. So it's just so wonderful to spread knowledge and to inspire people because it's all hands on deck. We need smart people, you know, picking up the task here. There's, you know, my bee discovery is so extraordinarily unusual because there's over 200,000 entomologists, there's over 50,000 mycologists, and I'm the one to make this connection. We all grew up with Winnie the Pooh. We all knew that, you know, bees go into rotted logs to set up nests, and the bears go after the honey, you know, in the bees' nests and the rotted logs, but no one made the connection before me that the bees are getting immunological benefit from the mycelium rotting the wood. I mean, we are Neanderthals and nuclear.
Who would have guessed?
Well, we should have all guessed.
Yeah.
This is the problem. We're so hooked to our devices. We suffer from biological myopia, this narrow vision. People should look at where we came from. The biology of this planet gave birth to us. We need to reinvest in our ancestors and our ecosystems now.
Let's go to the phones. Final calls. Joyce in New Mexico. Let's get us started. Hi, Joyce.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome.
Paul, I've been using your mushrooms since 2016. I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. The tumor was removed, the lymph nodes. I started taking turkey tail, cordyceps, and reishi. 4V today. I had a PET scan couple of months ago, and I am clear.
Good for you.
Congratulations.
I have a question. I also have white matter disease in my brain and a lot of little strokes. Will lion's mane help that?
Ma'am, I'm not a medical practitioner, and I'm restricted by law to give any medical advice. I would encourage you to consult a medical practitioner who is skilled. The University of Arizona Medical School has over 2,000 physicians who have been trained specifically in the use of mushrooms for treatment of disease challenges.
That's amazing.
And so Dr. Andrew Weil is a good friend of mine, and he has created the program for integrative medicine.
Yep. And he's a giant in the industry, isn't he?
Yeah, he was a very early adopter of this. And so I would encourage you to consult a physician associated with the University of Arizona Medical School.
All right, go for it, Joyce. I hope everything works out. Next up, let's go to Tony in New Hampshire. Hello, Tony. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had a quick anecdote and also a question afterwards.
Sure.
So I just had been listening to an interview that Paul did on a podcast earlier today. Really great stuff. And, you know, I haven't listened to Coast to Coast in maybe, you know, several months. I don't know what clicked in me, but just kind of had a sudden impulse to
and here he
flip
is.
It on. And, yeah. And there he was talking about bees and mycelium and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I just thought that was interesting. Maybe he was reaching out to me through the network.
You could be.
The network.
Synchronicity.
Yeah. And then my other question is, you know, I've suffered with depression and stuff in the past. Currently I'm on SSRIs and, you know, obviously you know, he's not a medical practitioner, but I am curious as to if he has any knowledge between interactions between SSRIs and magic mushrooms, because I know he's talked about in the past.
Okay.
Just
what have mushrooms done, Paul, for mood?
Receptor. Yep.
What do they do for mood, Paul?
Well, this is where the clinical studies have shown that they're very powerful as an antidepressive. They suppress the default mode network, which is your basically your kind of your operating state of consciousness, and you're able to then we're able to have a lot more crosstalk through other parts of your brain. It basically breaks patterns, and depression can be a pattern that's hard to get out of. I would strongly encourage you to look at the research at Johns Hopkins. Which they have done specifically on this subject. And they have a great team of people. I mean, 700 to 800 people have gone through these clinical studies. It's quite extraordinary. And what the other thing is that's really important is something we're all going to face is our own mortality. We're all going to die. And the big movement right now is called the 920 movement, is to have psilocybin approved for end of life. Because when you're facing end of life, it's a form of depression. I mean,
oh yeah,
you know,
of course.
People are challenged. Now you can go to the end of your life and greet or meet your death, and you can be horribly afraid and depressed and scared, or with from the results of these mushrooms that have been clinically shown, you could then understand that, you know, you can meet your death with hope, optimism, and gratitude. I mean, that is a choice that each one of us should have the right to make. And I think the end of life choice, you know, in speaking to depression, I unfortunately have witnessed some, you know, very close people to me who have faced their death with fear and with hope. And it's interesting that given that option, I think it's something we all should have a right to.
Barbara in Los Angeles on our wild card line. Hi, Barb, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest. One day in the mid-70s, I was looking out the window, and it looked like a swarm of bees was migrating to a new area. And I was just wondering, do they do that?
Do bees swarm to other areas?
Yeah.
Sure.
Get up and leave and go somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Else.
They do it in unison. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, it's a new queen that's being produced. So a new queen, the colony split.
They follow the queen.
They follow the queen, and it's really interesting. New queens are fertilized with, you know, by about 20 to 30 or even more drones, and then the queen has enough sperm to be able to produce 2 million offspring. Those queens work hard. So yeah, what you're seeing is probably a swarm that's occurring from a new queen being produced, and again, that's a good thing to have. And when they swarm, they don't sting.
Is a bee born in a honeycomb?
Yes. Yeah, the broods are.
I remember that as a kid, watching those things pop out.
You know, bees are just, they're just so amazing. And they're so, I have 10 beehives, and I have not been stung yet.
Well, I've been stung only twice in my life, but it's not something I look forward to.
A key of handling bees, and Dr. Steve Shepard taught me this, is we move slow, and they get used to.
They're very smart.
They're very smart. They're in a different time frame. We are slow anyhow because they're buzzing around. They're a different time dimension entirely. But when you start moving slow, you're like standing still to them.
If you surprise them, they're going to sting you.
That's true. That's true. And they attack people that wear black. I always wear black. I've never been attacked by them. But just being really beekeeping is a wonderful thing. I encourage people to explore it as a hobby or a pastime. And it really helps nature. And it's something that brings you back. Mushrooms were my entrance into the natural world. They were beacons that brought me into the mycelial underground. And bees have brought me now into the understanding pollination and flowers and how the interconnectedness of nature. We live in a beautiful, beautiful reality when you understand how important nature is. And people who live in Shanghai or New York City and they're cloistered into their little apartments, you know, I think they have nature separation and anxiety. And they sort of mollify themselves with, you know, other stimulus, but I think getting back into nature is a real healthy thing for people to do.
Let's go to Michael in British Columbia in Canada, first-time caller. Michael, let's squeeze you in here, sir.
Thank you, George. Hi there, Paul. Probably just across the street from you. Some years ago, I was down in Argentina, the Mile Zero Pan American Highway, the national park there, and immense peat bogs and such, and trees fallen by Canadian-supplied beavers in 1946. But on the tree bark, there was a mushroom-like growth they refer to as a shushu, and just wondering if that was something familiar to you. It was sort of quite a white bulbous form. And my second question was going to be about the turkey tail mushroom and your research with American Cancer Agency, how that was going.
Yeah, well, the mushroom, without seeing a photograph of it or a better description, it's hard for me to focus on that. We were funded by NIH with $2.2 million for a breast cancer study using turkey tail mushrooms to enhance the immune system of breast cancer patients as an adjunct therapy. Multiple research articles have come out showing that using turkey tail mushrooms in combination with conventional therapies such as Herceptin or Taxol actually potentiates the effect of those chemotherapeutic drugs. And those of you who've seen my TED Med talk, my mother's 93 years of age. She's healthy, happy, and cancer-free. And she was diagnosed with advanced stage 4 cancer when she was 84. It crossed the meridian, it metastasized. She was too old for a mastectomy or a radiation therapy, and she started taking Herceptin and turkey tail mushrooms, and in 6 months the tumors all disappeared. And so many physicians are cognizant of this, and turkey tail mushrooms have no adverse consequences. And it's the most well-studied medicinal mushroom in the world. That's why NIH approved it. And I'm very happy that my mother's alive, and so is she, obviously. But I think personally turkey tail mushrooms made a big difference in the combination with conventional therapies to help her survive to the age of 93.
You could take those in supplement form?
Yes, you can. The mycelium is by far more active than the mushrooms. So the mycelium is the immune system of the mushrooms. If you think about it, it navigates through a very hostile microbial environment for months, years, and then it produces a mushroom. So the immune system of the mushroom, the mycelium, helps our immune system. It's within the window of life, the temperature window of life, that we exist. And so the compounds being expressed by mycelium, whole genomic sequences now have been done on several mushrooms, and far more genes are activated at the mycelial state than there are at the mushroom state. The mushroom is the end of the life span. It's like an apple or a peach or a pear to a tree. They're quick to rot after they ripen because they attract herbivores or mycovores to consume them. So the mycelium is far more active biologically and has a lot more compounds being expressed by it. And so we are really looking at those compounds in the mycelial state now that are expressed that are not in the mushrooms. So the mycelium, any product not using mycelium, let me put it this way, I think is immunologically inferior from the best evidence that I have, which is the most recent evidence in the scientific literature.
Paul, would you give out your websites, please, and where people can get your books?
Yeah, well, mine's simple. It's fungi.com, F-U-N-G-I.com. I registered that myself in 1994. I couldn't believe it. No one had it.
And you got it.
Yeah, I got it. So, I'm really much dedicated to spreading knowledge for the commons. We have to be profitable to be charitable, but I'm hoping to create a multi-generational platform to help biodiversity and to inspire legions of people to pick up, to join the field of mycology to make a positive difference in the world and for the future.
All right, my friend. Thank you, Paul. Stay in touch with us, if you would. Up next, we're going to be talking about a poltergeist.